It seems that everywhere we turn, we hear that someone is addicted to something. Now, unfortunately, our kids are, they're addicted as well, whether it's addiction to drugs, alcohol, food, sex, smoking, even video games, they are not immune to this. Addiction can plague anyone at any time. And this is especially true for Americans, since we live in a country chock full of enticing items and activities at every turn. Understanding and treating addiction, that's today on License to Parent. Well, hello and welcome to License to Parent, the only radio program helping parents raise their teens that takes its cues from within the proving ground of a residential program helping troubled teens, Shepherd's Hill Academy. Our host on License to Parent is the founder and director of Shepherd's Hill, Trace Embry, and I'm Rich Rosel. And Trace, I got to confess that when I think of addiction, I guess the first things that really come to mind for me are drug addiction and alcohol addiction. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned a moment ago in the intro, there are many things that people are finding themselves addicted to these days. Mm-hmm. I know in more recent years, a lot of men, and regrettably now women too, have confessed to being addicted to pornography. For others, it's gambling. Still others, it may be work. Yeah. The term workaholic got its name from that other condition I just mentioned, alcoholic. And our kids are no exception to the challenges of addiction. In your work here at Shepherd's Hill, do you think that anything has really changed? Has it gotten worse since the early days of Shepherd's Hill more than 20 years ago?
Yeah, well, I'd have to say that certainly kids have found more things to be addicted to, that's for sure. Yeah. But I also think that as a people, the further we stray from God, Rich, the more likely we are to be addicted to whatever our God or idol happens to be, because we all have them.
That's a good point.
As I see it, addiction is a little more than idol worship. We give time, energy, desire, and money to what's important to us, and you know, to what gets us through the day. And if what's important to us is something other than God, then there comes a point when God says, well, you know, have it your way. And whether psychology or psychologically, rather, let me back that up, and whether it's psychologically or physically, we get ourselves to a place where we can become dependent on a substance or activity that we have to have or think we have to have until it affects us at the biochemical level. Even video game addictions, these kids are affected at the biochemical level. But I have to believe it's all rooted in the spiritual until at a point it begins manifesting in the physical. And in the case of the addict, body and brain chemistry get adversely affected. Remember, before anything becomes a physical reality, it's first rehearsed as a thought or an idea. And thoughts and ideas are just as real as any empirical reality. That's just my take.
Well, today's guest on License to Parent says there is a cure for all of this. That, I guess, is the good news. In fact, he co-wrote a book entitled The Cure of Addiction. His name is Dr. Wynn Henderson. He's a retired physician with over 20 years of clinical experience. He's also the author or co-author of 38 books, including The Cure of Addiction, The Four Questions, Share Your Mission, The Deposition, The Secret to Happiness, The 12 Steps to Recovery Program Explained and Revised, The Secret to Happiness, and the book we're going to be discussing today, which came out in 2011, Freedom from Addiction. Now, for the last 40 years, Dr. Henderson has been counseling clients from all over the world on issues of addiction and finding one's life's and finding one's purpose in life. By the way, he's also the host of a radio talk show that's been around for about 14 years now called Share Your Mission, which seeks to give examples of how having a life of purpose brings happiness, contentment, joy, peace of mind, and, dare we say, success. And by the way, Dr. Henderson's mission in life is to help you find yours. And Trace, we've been waiting for that for a long time.
Absolutely. Wynn, welcome to the License to Parent broadcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Trace and Rich.
Well, you know, one of the things we deal with here at the Shepherd's Hill Academy is addiction. That evidently is what your whole life ministry is about as well. Tell us about your radio show, Share Your Mission, and your new iTunes podcast, Freedom from Addiction.
Well, it's been actually 16 years now. I started the program Share Your Mission, and we can talk later in the program of why that occurred. occurred, if you'd like. But the bottom line is that God created each of us with a specific, special purpose or mission. And if we can determine what that is and then try to accomplish it, we will have a totally different life than if we either don't determine what it is, or even if we do, we don't try to fulfill it. And that goes to the root of why people suffer from the disease of addiction, because they don't know what their mission is.
We create a lot of fish meals in life, don't we?
Absolutely.
How would you define addiction?
Well, in my book, I define it as when you come to understand that a behavior that you have is hurting you or someone you love, and you can't stop it for whatever reason, you're addicted to that behavior.
Where's the line between addiction and just a bad habit? Or who determines who's being hurt? I mean, how do we flesh all that out?
Well, I think in your mind, you know that you're being hurt by things that you do, or you're hurting someone else. And so the definition of who's been hurt comes from your own mind.
Well, it's a subjective thing.
But as Trace just pointed out, to the addict, quite often they don't think they're hurting anyone, least of all themselves. So is an addict the best person to make that that definition?
Well, you're right about that. One of the major problems with addiction is denial. And until you break through denial and you get to the point where you can say, yeah, I've got a problem, probably it's not going to be a cure for it. So you can look at it from either of the two ways.
But denial is a pretty popular and common problem. I mean, that's kind of the fundamental root of how addiction becomes the problem that is denial. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah. Well, you know, in the past, people have suggested that intervention is the way to do that, to get a person past their denial, which is to get their parents and coworkers and friends and everything to gang up on a person and try to break through that denial. But I found that most people, deep down inside, know that something is missing. And they're looking for that thing that's missing, and they go into the world to try to find something to fill that empty space. And unfortunately, it turns out that most of those things are bad for you. And so when you do something, let's take alcohol for example, you drink a lot of alcohol continuously and you have repercussions from it, that lowers your self-esteem and puts you in a cycle that generally doesn't break until you get to the bottom of the hole or you die.
You say all addiction is sin.
All addiction is what?
Is all addiction sin?
Sin. Sin, in my way of thinking, is missing the mark, that you didn't come up to what you knew that you should be doing, or a separation from God. Either one of those things you can call sin, and all addictions are sin, but there's a lot of things that aren't addiction that are also sin, so you can take... Excuse me?
No, I was going to bring that up here in just a little bit. I'm following you. You know. There's not everything is sin that you can be addicted to. There's some very innocuous, even good things that can be addictive if not engaged in the proper context and proper amount, even bad for you, like food, work, entertainment, or sex. You know, so those things can be addictive as well, and I think that's where you're headed, right?
Yeah, I don't think that there's any good addiction. Somebody might say, well, I'm addicted to exercise. Well, that's fine, But then there are people who, because they have to exercise 5 times a week, 2 hours a day, have bad family relationships. There's also people that do that that die from heart attacks. So I don't think that any addiction, regardless of what type it is, and there's over 20 of them that I treat, is a good addiction.
Someone getting life out of balance.
Yeah, it is out of balance. Let me, if you would like, go over quickly the different types of addictive behaviors, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. Listen quickly. Codependency, substance abuse, marijuana, alcohol, hallucinogens, opiates, inhalants, depressants, stimulants, anabolic steroids, gambling, kleptomania, smoking, sociopathic behavior, overeating, undereating, sexual abuse, non-sexual abuse, workaholism, excitement, power, greed, teenage rebellion, sexual compulsions, overspending, negative thinking, TV, gaming, internet, smartphones, and electronics.
It's interesting, you just mentioned in that long list one of the things that we see acted out a lot here at Shepherd's Hill, and that's teenage rebellion.
That's
how
right.
How is that an addiction as opposed to a behavior, maybe, or a malady?
Well, you know, it's all in the same ball of wax, depending on how you want to call it, how you want to put it under this umbrella or that umbrella. But teenage rebellion works just like any of the other addictions that I was telling you about. It has the same cause, and with the same spiritual treatment program, it can be cured permanently.
You know, it's interesting, a moment ago you were when you were defining sin, you used a term that I heard years ago, which is to say it's missing the mark. And I always heard that the word sin was a Greek term derived from archery, talking about missing the target. When, you know, God has what's best for you in mind, and you go for what's in, but not what's best, then you have sinned because you've missed the mark. This falls in line, as I understand it, with your passion to find a person's individual mission. How do you tie those that call, rather, into your treatment of these various addictions? How do you get people on the track of finding their life's purpose?
Well, that is, in my opinion, a basic spiritual truth. God created you, the individual, with a specific purpose that He didn't create any other individual on the planet with. And to hit the mark, to not miss the mark, you need to have a relationship with God where you can talk to God and He can talk back to you, and you can find out what your purpose is so that you can try to fulfill it. And I believe that if you're on that path, then the path of addiction just goes out the window. You're no longer looking for that emptiness, for the void in your life, because you've found it. So it comes down to knowing what causes addiction. The cause of addiction is two things. One, low self-esteem. And two, the lack of adequate spiritual consciousness. Those two things, if you correct, will also correct the disease of addiction permanently 100% of the time, no matter what type of behavior it is.
I know that a lot of addiction recovery centers have a high incidence of, what's the word, recidivism? Recidivism of, you know, people who go through the process and come back again and again and again. As I have look through the reviews on your book, which, by the way, is available on Amazon.com, I found that people are saying you've got some great success here. Do you find that once people approach addiction from the standpoint that you're talking about, they are free and clear from that point on, or is there a matter of them falling back into bad habits?
Well, because because the program that's talked about in my books, Freedom from Addiction is the last one, came directly from God through a direct conversation that I had with God some 20-something years ago, then it can be 100% curative of any individual. There's only three criteria that you have to make it 100% curable. And if you have those three things, I've never seen a failure. The first thing is you have to want to get well. So many people have addictions to this, that, and the other. They don't want to give them up, really. Or they might say, well, if you gave me a magic pill, I would take it if that would cure the problem. But they don't really, down in their heart, want to get well from this disease. So that takes out a very high percentage of people who are going to those facilities. The second thing is belief. Spiritual belief is the most important thing that an individual can have to change anything about themselves. And, you know, if you have the belief of a grain of mustard seed, as it says in the Bible, you can move mountains. And addiction is a mountain. And so you have to believe that this program that you're doing will cure you. And I try to put enough in the book to help people come to that level of belief. As a result of the first two things, if you will do the program, which is the second half of the book, you will be cured. I've never seen it not fail. And if it fails, it's because your own personal responsibility of not doing one of those three things.
There's almost a doubt of choice, basically. I've understood the healing in my years of doing this of any kind, addiction, whatever, boils down to three basic things. Now, that you can break those things down to more specifics, too, but it's confession, repentance, and forgiveness. You confess the problem, you know, and these are all choices. Repent, you know, you repent of it, and then you forgive those who have hurt you, or maybe you hurt yourself. Forgive yourself. But it really boils down to a choice.
Well, you know, that's important that you mentioned forgiveness, because forgiveness is one of the spiritual keys to this problem. In Alcoholics Anonymous and their writings in 1935, they didn't have that step. So I revised their program for them and took step 6 and 7 and put them together since they were the same thing and added a step for forgiveness. Now, you'll never be able to increase your self-esteem to the point that you're cured of your addictive disease unless you forgive everybody that's ever hurt you. After having done that, you can forgive yourself for the things that, you know, were bad that you did. And you can accept God's forgiveness also. In that way, your self-esteem rises to the point that you're able to get past your disease.
Our guest today is Dr. Wynn Henderson. He is discussing addictions with us, mainly because Trace and I can't get past doing this program so much, and we're trying to get out of it. Dr. Henderson, though, has written a book that we're discussing today entitled Freedom from Addiction. You'll find that online at www.amazon.com. And this is Licensed to Parent. You'll find us online at licensedtoparent.org. We'll be back with more conversation with our guest, Dr. Wynn Henderson, right after this. And welcome back to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential treatment program working with teens in crisis. This program, of course, trying to help parents of teens become more effective parents, the kind of parents that God would intend them to be. Dr. Henderson, we've been talking about how a person needs to recognize the need for help and be willing to get it in order to really be helped by your process or any process. Let's talk to parents, though. This being a parenting program,
How can parents who see patterns of addiction in their children and their teens in particular, how can they get their teens on the right path to healing? What would a parent need to do if maybe the teen is not seeing there's a problem yet?
You know, this is very important because addictions, if they're nipped in the bud in children, can totally change the world around. You don't need to wait until you're 50 years old to figure out that you've got a problem. So parents should do things. Now, I'll just tell you a quick story. Back some time ago when I was lecturing on that, a fellow out in the hallway, he was talking about addictions, and he said, why is it that we didn't have drug problems when you and I were growing up? And I said, well, you know, I had a drug problem when I was growing up. I was drugged to church on Sunday morning. I was drugged to church for weddings and funerals. I was drugged to family reunions and community socials, no matter what the weather was outside. I was drugged by my ears when I was disrespectful to adults. I was drugged to the woodshed when I disobeyed my parents, told a lie, brought home a bad report card, did not speak with respect, spoke ill of my teacher or priest, or if I didn't put forth my best effort in anything that was asked of me. I was drugged to the kitchen sink to have my mouth washed out with soap if I uttered a profanity, and was drugged to the homes of neighbors to help them mow their yards, repair their clotheslines, and if my mother or father had ever known that I took a single dime as a tip for this kindness, my dad would have a whack at me. Those drugs still in my veins, and they affect my behavior in everything I do or think. They're stronger than cocaine, crack, or heroin. And if today's children had this kind of drug problem, America would be a better place. So God bless the parents who drugged us.
Out of curiosity, did any of your books help you get past that addiction?
Well, that was kind of, you know, just... something that I was talking to this parent about. I didn't really get all those things. Some of them I got. But here's the basic truth behind this, is that you have to have a good self-esteem, and if you don't, you're going to be addicted to something. Now,
can I challenge that self-esteem thing here
for
a second? Because I think it might be a more matter of semantics. Self-esteem, as we commonly use it, I think...
Or at least as we use it today.
Yeah, I think maybe better said sober judgment, maybe, because I don't want a juvenile delinquent feeling good about being a juvenile delinquent. And I think even secular psychology is looking at their self-esteem model and scratching their head thinking, you know what, maybe we kind of missed the boat here.
In the context of what you're saying, how are you defining self-esteem?
Self-esteem is an internal thing, and it's also a spiritual thing. If you know the answers to the four questions, and that was a book that I wrote once, and you can apply those answers to your life, you will have a great self-esteem. Let me give you those questions. Who am I? Where did I come from? What am I doing here? Where am I going when I'm done? Now, with the proper answers to those questions, your self-esteem will be great. For example, who am I? I answer that I am a child of God. Now, if I really believe that I'm a child of God, God never made anything bad. I've got that internalization that I am good. And the rest of the questions go the same way. So if you say, I'm a child of God, I came from God, I'm here to do God's word, and when I'm done, I'm going home to God, you will have a good self-esteem. So your definition of self-esteem and my definition of self-esteem might not be the same definition, but it's an internal process by which you know that you are very valuable, and that you're worthwhile. Your life is worthwhile because you have a mission and you're wanting to get on to it.
Yeah, and in the sense that you're loved by God, you're a child of God, then you know who you whose you are, who you belong to. I understand that, but I think...
And we would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. I mean, but I think that it's important that we do, as Paul says, look at ourselves with sober judgment as we really are, and it's where we need improvement, we strive to improve, knowing that we're a child of God, and knowing that you know, God is there to be our healer. But I think a popular pop psychology has brought into the notion that, you know, I deserve the best of everything just for showing up, you know. And
and you often talk about us defining terms using the Devil's Dictionary.
Exactly.
This is the exact thing.
Right.
We have taken self-esteem, meaning self-understanding one's self-worth, as implanted in us by God.
The whole self-realization idea that, you know, it's all about me, you know.
Yeah, and that's not what we're talking
about at
all.
This falsely fluffed idea that, you know, I deserve the best of everything for showing up. And I think that's what's bred a sense of entitlement in a lot of kids today, and parents are guilty of doing that. Again, I don't think their definition of self-esteem or sober judgment, I don't think they've actually come to an accurate definition of that. And I think the terms can get clouded. I just wanted to kind of, you know, bring that up a little bit.
Let me just say that even though I'm a medical doctor and I've done psychology, I don't believe in all this pop psychology type stuff. I believe that the process that we're talking about here is a spiritual problem. And I know that this particular program can cure anybody. And the reason that it can cure anybody is because it came from God, and God doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah, and didn't Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't it start out more of a Christian type of recovery?
No, it's not Christian. They call it spiritual. They say your higher power, and your higher power could be anything. But
didn't that morph into that, though? Didn't it originally start, there was another organization that it kind of... parlayed into that did come from a more Christian component, and then it turned into a higher power, I think, back in the 30s, 1931, I think.
I didn't start reading about it until the stuff came out in 35, so I can't answer that.
Okay. But the question I really want to get at is, what's the difference between a Celebrate Recovery and an AA?
Okay. I'm very familiar with AA. I'm not totally familiar with Celebrate Recovery. If you could tell me what their basic principle is, I could tell you the answer to that question.
I think it's basically, you know, pulling the curtain back on the whole higher power thing, and they do go into the fact that it is Jesus Christ.
Many churches, at least around this area, have Celebrate Recovery programs. So, yeah, I think it may be the AA model adapted into a more Christian worldview. I'm not sure.
Well, Wynn, here's a question I had to ask you before we close out here. I've heard two arguments about alcoholism. One camp says it can't be cured, just managed. The other says it can be cured. Which is it, and how do you know?
Any of those 20-something addictions that I went over with you can be cured permanently. And alcohol is no different from any of the others. None of them are any better or worse. They all come from the same disease process, and if you get a spiritual treatment for them, you don't have to worry about them anymore.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the alcoholic can go back to being a social drinker? You know, maybe a couple of glasses of wine at dinner?
Yeah, sure.
Or one?
Sure, because, you know, the alcoholic in his addiction does not just drink a glass of wine. He drinks 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But he wants to change his mentality. And the person who is cured from addiction doesn't need to get high. So if a person has been through this and they've cured that disease process, then if they have a glass of wine... No problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've already talked about drugs and alcohol, but how does a parent know when his 10-year-old is addicted to food? You know, obesity is a big deal in America today.
Overeating, yeah. They're addicted to overeating. Well, you just look at the signs that your children have, and then you know that they, like adults, have this problem with lack of spiritual understanding. And I can give you a list of the signs to look for. They are anxiety or nervousness, depression, pain, either emotional or physical, loneliness, lack of love, lack of emptiness or void, sense of failure, insecurity, sorrow, unhappiness, lack of acceptance, guilt, shame, lack of energy, chronic fatigue, fear, boredom, anger, resentment, self-pity, the need for immediate gratification, and suicidal thoughts. If your child has any of these, it's from a disease process, which we're talking about today.
And these are spiritual issues, but short of a treatment center, how can a parent effectively intervene on behalf of a, say, 14-year-old child with parent food addiction without fireworks in the home?
Well, you know.
Or is fireworks in the home just part of the deal?
You want to start when they're a baby, and you want to teach them the truth early on. But if you get to the teenage years and you're seeing teenage rebellion as the addictive behavior and everything, then somehow or the other, you need to break through that denial, and as a parent, you need to teach. And the answers to those questions of how to do that is in my book and probably other people's books, too. You need to make it an important enough thing for your family that you're willing to read, learn, and teach.
Starting young, that's the key, folks. Dr. Henderson, I hate to say it, but our time is up today. Thank you so much for being a part of Licensed Parents, sir.
Well, I really enjoy talking to you guys.
Yes, sir. Our guest today has been Dr. Wynn Henderson, and the book we've been discussing primarily is one of 38 he has written or co-written. It's entitled Freedom from Addiction. You can find that online at Amazon.com. And this is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential program helping teens in crisis. To find out more, to subscribe to our blog and e-newsletter, or to hear any of our past programs, you can visit us online at licensedtoparent.org. And by the way, while you're there, please remember that we rely on your tax-deductible donations to continue our outreach. We would be very grateful if you consider joining us as a ministry partner by making a monthly or a one-time gift to Licensed to Parent. And you can do so securely when you click on the donate button at the top of the page at licensedtoparent.org. And thank you in advance. For Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rosel, inviting you to join us once again next week and renew your Licensed to Parent. And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.